helping Isaac. All right. Well, we're going to continue our series, second hour series in the book of 1 Peter. I teach a homeschool class for the kids called Godly Grammar, where I teach them grammar by using the Bible. And I'm going to apply my last week's lesson. And I taught them that if you want to be a good teacher, you just need to focus on two elements of grammar. Find the main verb and find the conjunction. Find the main verb and find the conjunction, because that's the main verb is going to tell you what to do, and the conjunction is going to tell you how the things that you do is connected with the last thing either that God did or said and what you're supposed to do. So I'm going to take that advice. Thankfully, my passage this morning has one main verb. Whew. And a few conjunctions. Especially thankful because I realized last night that I didn't like my message. So I said, what do I do now? Well, I go back to the main verb. Start from the main verb. Okay? So this afternoon, we're going to consider about, and I'll show you the main verb. It's right here. Conduct yourselves in fear. That's the main verb in this passage. And you can turn in your Bibles, if you have them there, to 1 Peter chapter 1. And we'll show you how we get here by doing a little bit of review. So let's read the passage that we looked at last week. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 13. And I'll read through verse 16 by way of review. Peter writes, therefore, gird your minds for action. Keep sober in spirit. Fix your hope completely on the grace to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, do not be conformed to the former lusts which were yours in your ignorance. But like the Holy One who called you, be holy yourselves also in all your behavior. Because it is written, you shall be holy, for I am holy. Now, there's a key conjunction here at the beginning of this passage. Anybody knows what that conjunction is? Therefore. Whenever you see the word therefore, you should ask yourself, what, Kyler?
Oh, what's that?
What's the therefore, therefore, right? Sorry, Kyler, I didn't know that you were talking. I actually usually call on the kids in Bible time when they're talking. I actually called on him because I knew the answer and he happened to be talking, so sorry. It's Marty's fault. Is that on the tape?
That was Marty's fault.
No worries. Okay. Therefore. What is the therefore, therefore? What is the connection between what's after the therefore and what's before the therefore? They're connected. Good. How are they connected?
Right.
In light of the first 12 verses, he says, therefore, you should have an appropriate response. And it all started in verse 3 when Peter says that the Father caused us to be born again to a living hope. Well, just by the way, what does that make us if we're born of the Father?
Children.
Good, right. Children, right? The Father causes to be born. Okay, those that are born of the Father are his children. Good, and that'll come up later. And within that first 12 verses, he talks about some of the greatness of that salvation, and Pastor had highlighted that. It's so great a salvation that believers are able to have joy in suffering. Because despite their suffering, they can have joy because their salvation is greater than their suffering. And Ben talked about how that salvation is so great that the prophets were seeking to know the Christ that they were writing about. That salvation was so great that the angels who look at God, I mean, how great of a view is that? would also seek to or long to look into our salvation. That's an amazing thought. That is a great salvation. And so in light of a salvation we're suffering for, salvation that the prophets long to know, the object of Christ, a salvation that the angels long to look into, the angels who behold God Himself also long to see that salvation, Peter said there's appropriate responses that believers should have. And Pastor had talked about that. And what I wanted to key in on in verse 13, and you can see it up here, actually in the original language, these gird and keep sober, those are kind of participles. So it says having girded, keeping sober. So there's really only one main verb. It's fix your hope. Fix your hope on the grace to be brought to you. And then the next passage, there's one key verb in 14 through 16, and it's be holy. So Peter says, in light of that great salvation, fix your hope on the grace to be brought to you and be holy. And then today we're going to look at the third exhortation in verses 17 through 21, where he says, conduct yourself in fear. And let me read that passage to the next slide. Verse 17, Peter writes, and if you address as Father the one who impartially judges according to each man's work, conduct yourselves in fear during the time of your stay upon earth, knowing that you are not redeemed with perishable things like silver or gold from your futile way of life inherited from your forefathers, but with precious blood, as of a lamb unblemished and spotless, the blood of Christ. For he was foreknown before the foundation of the world, but has appeared in these last times for the sake of you, who through him are believers in God, who raised him from the dead and who gave him glory, so that your faith and hope are in God. Doesn't the Bible tell us, do not fear? What's the answer? Is the answer yes? Yes. The answer is yes. The Bible tells us, do not fear. Does the Bible tell us to fear? Yes, it does. So there are times when we should not fear, and there are times when we should. And we need to know the times we're not to fear and the times that we are to fear. And the things that we should not fear, and the things that we should not fear. And in this particular passage, Peter's going to tell us what we should fear. So we're going to look at, in the outline, three things here. Conduct yourselves in fear. We're going to look at what to fear, why to fear, and how to fear, according to Peter. First, we're going to look at what to fear. This is my next slide. Number one, what to fear. And the first one is, the first thing that is right to fear is we should fear not hoping in God. Okay? Now, I meant to ask this as a question, so I got ahead of myself. But if you just read the passage, it says, conduct yourselves in fear. So I shouldn't have told you that. Because the question I have to ask myself is, what am I supposed to be afraid of? So this would have been a lot more effective if you there was like 5 minutes of silence and you weren't sure. So let's pretend that just happened. I don't know. save myself 5 minutes. I don't know. I'm not sure. It doesn't really say that, you know. Fear what? Fear what? Well, I had to take the passage in this larger context. And you remember in this passage, verse 13, remember we said the first main verb was fix your hope on the grace to be brought to you. And you remember back in verse 3, Peter says that God the Father has caused us to be born again to a living, what? Hope. to a living hope. We've been born again. We've been born as children to hope. And then he tells us later, based upon what God has done, what should you do? Fix your hope. And then at the end of this passage, he sums up the purpose of all this. In verse 21, he says, so that, that's a purpose conjunction, so that your faith and hope are in God. So I'm just looking at the larger context of this whole passage and saying we're born again to hope. He tells us to fix our hope. All this passage that we're going to look at today ends in the purpose that we would fix our hope. And so at the very least, part of what we should fear is not hoping in God. There's a passage in Romans 11:20, speaking of the believing Gentiles, it says that they stand by their faith, but he says, don't be conceited. Don't be arrogant, but fear. So there's a fear that we should have, even in that we would, the faith that we have, the hope that we have, there's a healthy fear. Don't become conceited. Don't take it for granted. Fear. Protectively fear. In a good, healthy way. Fear that you would be, fear being one that falls away from that hope and that faith that God has born you again to. And then secondly, I saw what to fear. I think part of the fear is hoping in futile things. Because in verse 18, he says, knowing that you were not redeemed with perishable things like silver or gold from your futile way of life. So he wants us to hope, to fear not hoping in God. And when we don't hope in God, guess what we put our hope in? Futile things, right? Things that are futile. What does futile mean? Purposeless? Good. Futile. Could be temporary things. It's futile. It doesn't. Pointless. Things that don't really matter. And I think we should be fearful of not hoping in God. And when we don't hope in God, guess what? People will always put their faith and hope in something, right? And if it's not in God, anything that's not God is, to some degree, futile, okay? And that's why even the things that we do in life, we always have to make sure that we do for the glory of God, right? Otherwise, anything that is apart from God is futile, pointless. And so we must ask ourselves the question, if we are to conduct ourselves in fear of not hoping in God, and by not doing that, hoping in futile things that we've been redeemed from, do we have that fear? Are you afraid? I mean, think of things that you're afraid of. What are some things that we fear? We fear people. Yeah. That's true. That's a good one. We fear finances, right? Fear that I'll never be able to retire now that my 401k is at zero. We fear the unknown. Yeah. Yeah, we do. What we fear, what we don't know. Yeah, we fear losing people. That's good. We fear poor health. Ailing, getting old, Becky. We fear losing jobs. Yeah, that we might lose our jobs.
Jeff. Typically that people won't like us.
Yeah. 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 Those are good. I mean, lots of things we fear. But God doesn't tell us to conduct yourselves in fear of any of those things, right? The idea is here is, I think the idea is fear losing your hope. Fear being focused on things that don't matter. Somebody once said, oh, I can't do the quote, so, but it's a great quote. It's a great quote. But basically it's saying, you know, one of the tragedies of life is having lived for things that don't matter. Having lived for futile things. And fearing those things that really in the end don't matter. Now, the heart of this passage is going to give us these great reasons why we should fear losing our hope. Or why we should fear that we wouldn't hope in God. And he gives us a lot of reasons. Because God is hope worthy. Okay? And he's going to give us lots of reasons why we should be fearful of not hoping in God. Because he's worthy of hope. And let's look at that. Why to fear? And there's two main reasons that Peter gives. Because of who God is. And because of what God has done. Okay? And we'll look at that in the text. And who God is, what God has done. There it is. And then let's focus in now on the next slide. Who God is. Two things about God that will help us to fear hoping in futile things and not hoping in God. You can go ahead. In verse 17, Peter writes, "And if you address as Father the one who impartially judges according to each man's work." What two things does this tell us, this verse, tell us about who God is? Good. That God is our Father, and what else? And he's our judge. Right? You got it. You don't need me. So, what's that? Impartial judge. Good. So we can click that on. So, who God is? God is Father, and God is judge. Now, this is interesting because I was reading a commentary that I have, and it's asked a question. Which is the emphasis in this passage, in this verse? Is it emphasizing that God is our judge, therefore we should fear? Or that he is our Father, therefore we should fear? And I really don't like it when preachers say, and I've said it before, it's both, okay? Because it's not both. It's never both. I mean, the writer intended it to be one. The better thing is, I don't know which one it is. It's not both, which is more emphatic, but one of them's right. So I'm going to tell you both. Then you can pray about which one's right. I'm supposed to resolve that for you, but I couldn't. You could, but I'll tell you how the logic works, right? Here's the idea. Because God is judge, that is, because God will hold you accountable for your life, according to every man's deeds. Every man will give an account for what he has done. And so, based upon God being judge, we should fear. Fear not hoping in him. Fear hoping in futile things because he is judge. So the text reads, "If you address his Father, the one who impartially judges." So your Father is also going to be your judge. So there's a healthy biblical fear that goes along with that. But the flip side of it is to say this. There is a God who will judge every man's deeds, every man in the world. But how do believers address that judge? As Father. So there's another way of looking at it that says that judge is our Father. So then it becomes almost like a reverent fear. The one we address as Father, or I should say, the one who is the judge, he is our Father. The one we address as Father is the judge. And so I don't know which it is, but I do know we're supposed to conduct ourselves in fear because God is our Father and God is our judge. That much I know. That we will be held accountable. And even in a special way, despite being our judge, God is also our Father. And those are reasons why we should hope in Him. And fear not hoping in Him. So let's look on. We know we should fear God, fear not hoping in Him, fear hoping in futile things because He is our Father and Judge. And then secondly, because of what God has done. Verses 18 through 21. What has God done? You tell me, what has God done? Good, everything. Now let's be a little more specific. Yeah, He's provided redemption. In fact, verse 18 says that we have been redeemed from... I got the order wrong. My bad. Let's put them all up there. We have been redeemed from futile things. And that's why we should not... We should be fearful of hoping in them. What does that mean? He's redeemed us from them. He's ransomed us from futile things. What are other synonyms? He's bought us back from futile things. He's delivered us from futile things. He saved us from futile things. And so, be fearful, knowing, and this is the reason why we should be fearful, because He's Father, He's Judge, but also because He's redeemed us from your futile way of life. And another one, on the next one, because He's redeemed us at infinite cost. Why should we fear hoping in things that don't matter? Fear not hoping in God, because verse 19 says, you are redeemed with precious blood, as of a lamb unblemished and spotless, the blood of Christ. What do you think about when you read that? What jumps out at you? Anything? Any words? Any images? Old Testament? I don't know. Yeah, the lamb sacrificed for the nation of Israel. Millions of lambs. The Passover. Innocence. Yeah, it speaks of a lamb unblemished and spotless. Christ's perfection, right? It's precious blood because we were redeemed at infinite cost. I mean, it was the cost of God's life. I mean, there's nothing more precious or there's nothing more valuable than God, right? I was even thinking, how do we put value on things? How do you know what something's worth? If you go into look at a catalog, you go in the store, how do you know what something's worth? Yeah, but that might differ for some people. So how would you know when you walk through a store? The price tag, right? What's the price? That tells you what something's worth, right? What was the price tag of our salvation? The death of Christ, right? I mean, there's nothing more valuable than God. And God's life was given. I mean, it's infinite value. It's precious. It's precious. So the cost was the cost to Christ was His life for this salvation. But there's also another cost there, and it's the cost to God. Look at verse 20. Verse 20 says, For he was foreknown before the foundation of the world, but has appeared in these last times for the sake of you. Who was foreknown before the foundation of the world? Christ. Christ. And this idea of being foreknown, it's like an intimate knowledge. An intimate knowledge of someone. And it reminded me, it's the same word that Jesus uses in his prayer to his Father in John 17. He uses this phrase, before the foundation of the world. But he doesn't say, I was known by you. He says, Father, you loved me before the foundation of the world. And so before there was any world and any creation, there was the Trinity, and there was God the Father loving his Son. That Christ was foreknown before there was any creation. And there's so many people today that love the creation. Because it's all they have. Right? But you have to understand, before that creation itself is just the backdrop for the real drama. Some people are so taken by the beauty, and the creation is beautiful, but it's just the backdrop. It's like going to a play and just sitting there for 2 hours, right, and looking at the backdrop. And that's what people do. But that creation is the backdrop for the great drama of salvation that God had planned before the creation. And so it costs God the Father giving up his Son. It costs the Son his life. It costs God the Father that intimacy of relationship with his Son to some degree, at the very least on the cross, right? And even in that prayer, Jesus longs to be with his Father in the same way that he had before. It cost God the Father. It cost the Son. But it's encouraging for me that, let me go to the next one, that redemption was planned. Not only was it an infinite cost to Christ, infinite cost to the Father, but that it was planned. As one translation said, salvation was not an afterthought. That there was a creation, then there was a fall, and God said, okay, how can I fix this? Right? No, the fall was planned to be part of the drama. That's the way that God shows who God is. That is the way that God has shown us who he is. It was planned. Salvation was not an afterthought. And so verse 20 tells us that he was foreknown before the foundation of the world, but has appeared in these last times for the sake of you. He's appeared in these last times. I love that phrase, the last times. Because maybe some people ask you, you know, I know you're a Christian and you read the Bible. Do you think we're living in the last days? The answer is always yes. Yes. I mean, everything after Christ came is the last days. This is it. God is coming. Christ is going to return. It is the last days. Whether it is tomorrow or 100 years or 1,000, he has appeared in these last days. This is the time of the gospel, where God is reconciling men to himself because he's coming to judge the world. This is the last days. Christ is coming. This is the end of the drama. This is act 5 of the 5-act play. Okay? It's good for us to know that, right? Because, amazing, because Peter wrote this 2,000 years ago, and he hoped like Christ was coming tomorrow. Didn't he? And we lose that. We lose the plot. We lose the plot. But it's planned. It's planned. And so we should be fearful of losing our hope in this great salvation that God has planned. And then the next one, that it's particular. He has appeared in these last times for the sake of you. For you. He's writing this to these believers. I mean, that just always is amazing to me that Christ came for my sake. And if he's come for me, and I'm hoping in futile things, I should be afraid. I should be hoping, since Christ came for me and bought me a glorious salvation, I should be afraid if I'm not hoping in what he has purchased for me. And then finally, that a reason why we should fear not hoping in God is because that salvation is powerful. Verse 21 says, "Who through him are believers in God, who raised him from the dead and who gave him glory, so that your faith and hope are in God." It's a powerful salvation that God has purchased. If we're hoping in other things, we're hoping in things that are powerless, right? Where's all of God's power? It's in his church. It's in his gospel. It's in what he accomplished in Christ, raising him from the dead. It's in his promises to raise us from the dead. Let's hope in that. Let's fix our hope in that and fear not hoping in the very thing that God has intended for us, so that our faith and hope are in God. God says, "I've done all this so that your faith and hope would be in God. I've done all that." So based upon all these reasons of what God has done, is our faith and hope, has God done enough? Has God done enough for us to hope in him? Are those enough reasons? And that God is our Father? And that God is our judge? Does God have good reason to tell us to be afraid if we're not hoping in these things? God help us, right? If we're not. God help us if we're not. And I just wanted to wrap up with, I thought, just a few practical ways that we can do this. So we're going to look at how to fear. So one I thought of is just the priority of communion service. I know for me it's a personal conviction, when possible, to be at every time of the Lord's Supper. And I think that we should have a healthy fear of not meeting with the Lord. I mean, the Lord who has done all that for us, right? And the Lord says, "Do this in memory of me." And if we choose to miss that for futile things, man, what are we saying? What are we saying about that salvation? We're saying it's not as great as God says it is, right? I mean, and this is important too. I think that that Jesus died not just to redeem us from things that don't satisfy, and to redeem us to things that are satisfying, which is him, but also to show the world that he is satisfying, that God is sufficient. And so when we are hoping in things other than God, we just say, you know, God's kind of satisfying. Kind of. And when we have a communion service and we say, it's kind of satisfying, but not always. That's not a problem with God and what God has done. That's a problem with us. Because we haven't found God to be all that he is. Does everybody agree with that? Okay. Because if we don't, we should be fearful. Because God says, I've given you everything. I've given you the most valuable thing I have. And we need to fear not hoping in that. I mean, people you work with, people you live with, your family, if I ask them, pull them all in here, everybody leaves and all your friends come in. Say, what is Jeff Blair hoping? What would they say? What is Stan Nelson hoping? What would your friends say? What would your family say? God has given us more than enough reasons to hope in him. If we choose not to, the problem is us. Another way that we can fear is sharing our testimony in the gospel. Just sharing what God has done. The greatness of God and the greatness of what He has accomplished. I mean, these are verses that we looked at. Do you know that God has been here? I mean, this is to tell people, do you know God has been here? Do you know I know what God says? Do you know I know what God's plans are? Do you know I know what God told me what His plans were before He even created everything? I mean, just these amazing thoughts that God has told us, just renewing the excitement of the gospel that we know. Another way we can fear is not getting comfortable here. You remember what it said in verse 18? It says that we've been redeemed from your futile way of... Oh, no, that's not it. Where is it? Perishable things. No, it's here. It's conduct yourselves in fear during the time of your stay upon the earth. That's kind of strange language, right? What do you think of when you hear somebody say, during the time of your stay here upon the earth? A hotel, right? A hotel, or of being a visitor somewhere. During the time, we hope you enjoyed your stay. That's what they say, right? It's temporary, right? During the time of your stay, it's temporary. As my little girls would say, it's like staying at a hotel. They love to stay at hotels. But this is kind of the image. During the time of your stay, it's temporary. And it would be kind of silly if we went to a hotel and I started nailing pictures to the wall, right? Right? I call somebody up, hey, I don't like this carpet. Can you come rip it out? We're going to put a new carpet, right? This is not our house. What are you doing? Right? That's ridiculous, right? But the analogy is similar to our stay here upon the earth. This is a hotel, folks. Right? This is a hotel. Temporary. It's temporary. This is not it. This is not where you should put your hope. These are futile things, right? Don't start nailing up the pictures to the wall, so to speak. So to speak. We're going somewhere else. C.S. Lewis, I shared this once before, but C.S. Lewis speaks of eternity as a book. And he says, in eternity, this life is just the preface to the book. And eternity is the real story. And sometimes we think that this is the book. This is not the book. This is just the preface. It's just the preface. And so let's not make this the story, because the story is a whole lot better, because it's not about us, it's about God. And that's awesome. This is temporary. This is our exile. Even this own... What, you remember what Peter refers to these people at? Earlier in the book, as aliens, right? Aliens, strangers, sojourners. How deep are our roots? There's a song by those great theologians, the Newsboys. But the words are great. Music's not too bad either, but the words are great. And the song is called Lost the Plot. And he says, are you coming back? It's kind of a satire, but he says, are you coming back again? Will you bring me something from the fridge? And he goes on and he says, because I just got comfortable here. And he's speaking of Jesus. And the idea is, we think of Jesus' return as if He's coming back sometime, but I'm comfortable here. And I'd like to stay here. So we forget Jesus is coming back to take us to Himself, right? And take us to God. not to come and leave us where we're at. And there's a verse that says, are you still calling? You forgave, we forgot. We misplaced the ending, and so we lost the plot. We forget what all this is about. We forget that God has called us to hope in the great salvation that He's purchased for, that He's returning to bring us to Himself. And when we've lost the ending, or when you forget the ending, you lose the plot. And if you lose the plot, you start hoping in futile things. Things that don't matter, because we forget what God has promised to do. We should be afraid of that. Be afraid of that. Because of all the reasons we said here, because God is our Father and God is our judge, and we just need to be guarded not to get too comfortable here. I mean, are we holding, is there anything that God can take away from you? That you value more than God. I mean, you look at Job, right? Man, he lost his family. And he worshiped God. Can we do that? If we're hoping in God, we can. We can. Because you trust God. And you trust. I mean, if God's done all that for us, if God has spared nothing to give us what's best for us, if He takes something away, He's not taking away from us the best thing that He could give, right? Romans 8:32 says that, speaks of God who basically has given His Son to us, how will He not with Him freely give us all things, right? I mean, if He's given you the most infinitely valuable things, how will He not give us all things that we need? And you know what? If He takes it away from us, you don't need it. You just don't need it. And then the last one, and this is praying, not worrying. You know, I love the comment, why pray? Because you can worry when you can worry. Why pray when you can worry? We love to worry, right? And you know what's interesting about this passage here in 1 Peter 5? And I never noticed this before, but look at 1 Peter 5. I just noticed this, I don't know, a few weeks ago. 1 Peter 5, 6, and 7. I'm very familiar with verse 7, which is casting all your anxieties on Him because He cares for you. And so we have a loving God who's given everything to us of highest cost in His Son and salvation, redeeming us. And so He says, give me your worries. I've given you everything. Why can't you give me your worries? We should be more than happy to give God our worries because He cares for us, right? But the thing that was interesting to me is, in context, the verse right before that speaks of God being opposed to the proud, but giving grace to the humble, and humbling ourselves so that God might exalt us. And just seeing those two together, like, oh, I get it. The reason I don't pray is because I'm proud, right? It's because I think I can handle it. Because I think I can manage it. Because I'm not broken. I don't have a right view of myself. He says, humble yourself. And how do you humble yourself? One way of humbling yourself below God is letting God be God. He says, give me your worries. I got it. Hasn't He done enough to show us that He can handle, you know, what we need? He's redeemed us. And so I think one way that we can renew our hope in God and not hope in futile things is be praying to the Lord, hoping in Him and casting it on Him. Lord, I'm hoping in You. I'm hoping in You because this looks hopeless to me. Just open it up for a couple minutes. That's about all I had, but What are some thoughts you had just from the things we've talked about? Yes. Right. Good. That's a good point. The fear that we have is not a dreadful fear of the Lord. There is a reverence and an awe. But it also comes with understanding that God will do whatever it takes to, He's our Father, to get His children where He wants them to be. But it's not the kind of fear that God tells us not to have, which is fear of judgment, right? 1 John 4 says, perfect love casts out fear. And a true believer walking with the Lord should not fear condemnation. We don't have that. We don't. Now, a believer can fear condemnation if he's not walking with the Lord, right? Because he has no assurance. But what he's really fearing is not, he's fearing the fact that he might be an unbeliever, right? Because unbelievers' fear of the Lord is not just reverence. They should be scared out of their socks, right? Yeah, I mean, and so the fear that we have is different than a fear that an unbeliever should have. But it's not a dread. We don't have a dreadful fear. Stan? Yeah, and I think I like the image of him being a father judge, you know? He's not a judge as a condemning judge, but to believers, but a father judge. I remember we have some friends in Texas, and we were sitting with them, and their older son, he's in going to medical school now. We were there visiting, and they have 8 children. The children, they're doing a good job, great parents, we admire them. And he was at the table, and I said, what would you attribute to your parents? What was good about the way your parents brought you up? And how would you attribute, from your perspective, what they did right that helped you to walk with the Lord and follow the Lord? And it wasn't what I expected, but it was interesting. He said, every time I was tempted to do things that would bring shame to my family or was sinful, I would just always think I couldn't, in light of all my parents had done for me, and in light of how they had trained me and poured their life into me, I couldn't bear doing something that would hurt them, right? And I thought that's really kind of the holy reverence. I mean, he had a reverence for his parents. And I think in similar ways, I mean, we have a reverence for God. In light of who God is and what he has done, we should think, I can't imagine sinning against my God in that way. But when we lose the plot and we forget who God is and what he has done, we will sin those ways. We lose the reverence. And so we always have to come back to the scriptures, and the scriptures remind us, even though we've been reading 2 Peter at home, Peter says, I know you know these things, but you don't know these things. They're not at the forefront of your mind. So I'm going to tell you them. That's why we're here today. That's why we're here Sundays. That's why you read your Bible. So that renews that reverence in God. Jeff.
The points you had there about how fear, sharing the gospel, sharing the gospel in our testimony.
That's good.
Not any kind of vengeance.
That's good. Yeah. Yeah. That's good. I mean, and that's what we need. We always need to get our focus right. The scriptures bring us back to getting the right focus. Because I know unbelievers will even say, well, you know, it could be a lot worse. And you know what? It can always be a lot worse. But the beauty of it is from the things that we hope in, it can't get any better. That's amazing, right? I mean, God's given us everything. And if we focus on that, it's like, wow, I have things that God has done for me and is doing for me that can't get any better. Even if things do get worse. You know, what really matters is the things that aren't futile. It can't get any better. So thank you for sharing that. Yeah. And so that, there was a couple other hands before we close. Tom. God's done all that he's done so that our faith and hope would be in him, and is it. And he gives us some tests in here. These commands are really tests. And if we fail the test, it's probably because we don't see God as our father like and judge like he says that he is, or we don't see who we are as his children and all that he's done to make us his children. And we have to go back to that to get to that obedience. That's good. Okay, I think we're done.
Well,
That's good. I mean, we got to get the first page right. God got it right. Right? We just need to be reading his story and not our story. Or if we're reading our story, it's our story in light of his story as his obedient children, right? And you get it right, and it'll pay dividends for eternity. Dividends for eternity. So let's get our hope right and fear not doing that.